Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a midday Mailbag Monday. Today, we got great questions for you from Microventure Funding, Fred Pater, hope I'm saying that right, Vernon Corbin, Brian Wilkinson, Timmy, and the Dr. RJP. We're going to be talking about where folks might be going in the draft later, who our strongest units are on both sides of the ball, what we're looking at in the transfer portal, and if there should be some position changes for the Florida State Seminoles. We got a great show for you. Let's dive in.
You are Locked On Seminoles, your daily podcast on the Florida State Seminoles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
And as always, folks, welcome to Locked On Seminoles. We tweeted out, we did not get to publish this mandatory Mailbag Monday yesterday, or I guess last night. Typically, we record the night before. We were doing Mother's Day stuff, and I hope a lot of y'all were too. But today, we're here, and I'm going to give you a midday drop. Like I said, it is mandatory Mailbag Monday, so make sure, if you want to be on the next one, you subscribe to the channel and leave your comments down below. I'm going to start off with Microventure Funding, good friend of the show. Micro says, given how rookie contracts work, early rounders get guaranteed money while five plus round are only guaranteed signing bonuses, typically less than 200K. Would it make sense for juniors with fifth round plus grades to stay in college for their senior year? Sam Howell comes to mind. Which FSU players on the current roster could this apply to? What positions do you think would be most likely to stay senior year? So that's an interesting question. Because I think the premise of the question is you only get guaranteed your signing bonus. And now that we are in the world of NIL, kids can make money while they're in college. So there is even more incentive to stay for an extra year. However, the positions that are most valuable on the NIL market are also likely to be the most valuable in the NFL, so the least likely to not get drafted. But if we're saying that it's just kids with a fifth round plus grade, I would say offensive line is where you'll see a lot more of that. And here's why. Offensive line is equally valuable to NFL teams as it is to college. However, I believe offensive line is where you see the greatest talent disparity between what's an NFL O-lineman and what colleges have. So I think that there's a lot of guys who maybe get a sixth, a seventh, or an undrafted free agent grade that would actually make some decent money from an NIL collective if they were to stay in college for an extra year. So that's probably the position that you see that most often. And then, you know, look, other than that, that all comes down to the kid, right? I don't know if we're going to see a world, where it becomes more valuable to stay in college than to risk the draft for most players. But if you're getting that fifth round grade and, you know, because then you got to take injury into account. I mean, there's a lot there. You will see it more, but I'm going to stick with O-line final answer. If you're asking about our team specifically, I mean, we just saw it with Fabian Lovett, right? He probably could have gone to the draft this year and maybe contended for a day three pick or gotten himself picked up as an undrafted free agent. And I think if he stays and has a year like he did last year, we're going to see him do a lot better than that. So thanks for the question. We appreciate it as always. Fred Pater or Pitre, P-I-T-R-E. My partner, could you list the individual FSU position groups from strongest to weakest? Now that the date to transfer and still be eligible has passed, most of the guys considering leaving have done so. Okay, so quick thing on that, not to be nitpicky, the deadline to enter the transfer portal has passed, but the deadline to transfer hasn't. So for us, all intents and purposes, yes, we've seen who's going to go in the portal. For getting guys in, just because we haven't gotten them doesn't mean we won't. I know that wasn't the crux of your question, but just wanted to clarify that. So I don't know how to answer your question. I don't know how to rank the position groups from strongest to weakest other than my opinion, but I did my best. Y'all know I'm the data nerd. You know I like to look at the numbers. So I looked at what are we returning in different positions versus what we're losing. So when I looked at offense, I looked at expected points added. That's a metric. It's opponent adjusted. So it takes into account who you're playing and it takes into account garbage time. So it eliminates, you know, guys running and throwing the ball when you're up by 10 or whatever. When I looked at that, the delta between who's returning for next year and how many expected points per play on average they bring back with them, and total how many expected points they added to our outcomes last year, the delta between that and then what we're losing at the position ranked the following. QB is where we have the greatest delta between what we're returning and what we're losing, obviously, right? Next was wide receiver. And when I factor in the transfers at wide receiver and what they did at their other schools, you're seeing a pretty strong swing between what you're losing, which is, I think, like under 20 points added last year. Again, it's expected points on a play. It's not points they actually added onto the scoreboard. I know it's a wonky metric, but it's the best I got to answer this question. And you're seeing a pretty good influx of talent. Now, Winston Wright's not going to be there. It's relative, right, this metric. So we had a not-so-great receiver core, and I don't know if replacing them or bringing in, you know, being better than that is that great. And then running back was your final one because you're losing Jayshon Corbin. But if I'm going to rank it in strength of the unit, I think that your running backs will be your strongest unit on offense. I think that Trey Benson has shown or showed in the spring game that he may be as good as advertised. We saw what Trayshon Ward can do last year. We saw what CJ a little bit can do, even though I think, you know, he's not going to be a feature. We've got Lawrence Toa-Philly coming back, and I think they should set up to be your strongest unit on offense, especially when you have a team that ran over 60% of the time last year, and that's what this team likes to do. Second one, I think, is going to be your offensive line. If Robert Scott can take that step forward, if Caden Lyles, the transfer, is as good as advertised, if Bless Harris can step up at one of the tackle positions, as we're expecting him to do, and if Dylan Gibbons can stay healthy most of the season, and Darius Washington can, you know, be serviceable for you over there, and you know, maybe Maurice Smith stays at backup center, or maybe you get him at a guard position where he can provide a little bit of swing depth there. You could have a pretty strong unit, especially relative to last year. So if I'm ranking the offensive units, it would be O-line, it would be running back, O-line. I'm not going to rank quarterback because it's one guy. And obviously it's the most important position on the field, and hopefully it's, you know, hopefully it is what it is. And then I think I would put wide receivers behind that. The reality is there's potential at wide receiver, but we've got to see more. It's a show me year, and we'll know against Duquesne what they kind of look like. And LSU is going to give us a very good idea of what we have at wide receiver. Moving on to the defense, to me, far and away, your best unit on defense is going to be your defensive tackles. You bring back 92% of last year's tackles total in the defensive tackle position. Now, the caveat there is that you're losing almost all of your production at defensive end last year. With Quayshon Fuller entering the transfer portal, with Jermaine Johnson going to the NFL, you, Kier Thomas signing an NFL contract and leaving, you have big shoes to fill. Do I think we have the talent to do it? Not exactly, but in the aggregate, I think we do, but it's highly unproven. We don't know, and we won't know until we know. So I think D-tackle is your strongest. I think DB is your second. 81% of your defensive back tackles come back from last year. You also return 84% of your defensive backs' interceptions, the guys that made those, right? They come back. So That should look to be your second unit, right? You also added two very good true freshmen in Azariah Thomas and in Sam McCall. And I don't expect those guys to start, but I do expect to see playing time for them. So I think if I'm going to rank the defensive units, it's going to go D-tackle, defensive back, linebacker, and then I'm going to put defensive end down there because, frankly, we just don't know. And if you want me to, you actually asking the question, cornerbacks and safeties. I think the cornerbacks are stronger than your safeties. We'll see what healthy Brendan Gant looks like and what Akeem Dent's able to do, if he's able to sort of string together game after game. But I think the cornerbacks are probably your strength there as well. So I want to get to a couple more questions as promised. But first, I got to tell the people about Built Bar. Guys, if you've been following the show, first of all, thank you. Secondly, please, please, please make sure that you're checking out Built Bar because, sorry, I had to turn my mic up a bit. Because, folks, Built Bars are delicious. Built Bars are nutritious. They are 17 grams of protein. They are 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of carbs. They're everything you need. Pre-workout, post-workout, during workout, no workout. It's up to you, but make the right choice. Get the one that tastes like a candy bar, hits like a protein bar, and that is Built Bar. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Folks, we appreciate you making us your first listen every day. I know today we probably weren't your first listen. Again, we love our moms. Sorry, we couldn't get the episode out earlier, but we're here for you nonetheless. And we genuinely appreciate it. Please hit the subscribe button, like the video, all of that. We are over 1,000 subscribers right now. I would love to push to 1,500. I know we'll get there because we'll keep at it. Y'all keep at it. And it's just going to keep growing. So thank you for that. We really do appreciate it. Our next question comes from Vernon Corbin. Any word on the Oregon OT or any other potential O-line transfers? So there is one, I believe, JUCO transfer that we may be in the running for. However, mic got a little loud. However, I don't want to sound like a pessimist, but Vern, it's a crowded room right now. I mean, you talk to anyone that covers any school. I talked to all of our other Locked On hosts, and they all say the same thing, right? We would love to get an offensive line transfer. Bama wants offensive line transfers. Ohio State wants offensive line transfers. Notre Dame wants offensive line transfers. Everyone needs offensive line transfers. And the issue is, here at Florida State, our biggest selling point right now is playing time. And playing for Atkins, right? I mean, we've seen Atkins develop some talent, but he hasn't really gotten a chance to develop it at Florida State, and we haven't gotten to see him put anyone into the league. I mean, DLT is signed an undrafted free agent contract, but he was also banged up most of the year. So while playing time is a selling point here, we also have such a lack of depth that if you get banged up, you're still going to have to play, because we're going to need you to. So I don't know if Florida State is an attractive enough option to potential O-line transfers. And I hate for it to sound like I'm being defeatist or throwing in the towel. It is the number one position of need across the country. It's highly sought after. And any kid that puts their name in the portal that's worth a dang is going to be getting blown up by other schools. So, unless we get this one JUCO transfer who I believe may have gone to Charlotte for a bit or has a connection to Charlotte with Atkins, I think we may be in for what we see is what we get, and we're going to have to hope that some of these freshmen, if there's depth needs, can step up. Next question, we've got Brian Wilkinson. Brian asks, could Johnny Wilson theoretically handle putting on 35 to 45 pounds and being a tight end like Jelani Woods from UVA that just got drafted in the third round? He's got plenty of eligibility to do it if they wanted to. Dude can already block. So Drake would love this question. There's been a lot of talk about this, and I don't think it's an inherently bad idea. But I wonder what's in it for Johnny Wilson, because we just saw a draft where a historic number of wide receivers were taken and taken early. I think it was 7 or 8 wide receivers were taken in the first 2 rounds. He's got a very interesting body for a wide receiver at 6'7". And if his hands come together and he keeps the speed up, he could be a heck of a wide receiver. Now, you're absolutely right. He can already block. So I start to wonder, right? Let's walk through each element of him transferring the position, okay? First of all, can he gain 35 to 45 pounds? Possibly. Now, tall, lean guys, you know, he's got kind of that basketball player build. Not that he's small. I think he's about 225 right now. It's hard for them to gain weight. The taller you are, the harder it is to gain weight. It just, you know, the metabolism seems to work a little differently. And yeah, could he do it soon? No. You mentioned he's got a lot of eligibility. Yeah, he could put on 30, 40 pounds over the next 2 or 3 years. But the second part of that is, could he keep his speed up while doing it? And I don't know. He probably doesn't know. Really, no one knows until he does it. Some kids, they gain 20 pounds and they don't lose a step. Some people gain 5 pounds and they lose 2 steps. It that depends on the kid. So I think that would be concern number one. Number two, again, Jelani Woods got drafted in the 3rd round. Kyle Pitts, I think, was a first rounder to Atlanta 2 years ago. But tight ends aren't really the same. They're not valued the same in the market as a wide receiver. So if we look at it from Johnny Wilson's perspective, then he's more likely, at least right now, what the NFL market's telling us, to make himself a lot more money if he can become a better receiver than if he becomes a really, really good tight end. So you have to ask, and again, I don't know the answer to this, but what's more likely from his perspective, right? Is it becoming a top 10% of available wide receivers, or is it becoming like one of the best tight ends in the entire nation, like a top 2%, which is kind of the delta he'd have to do to get drafted in about the same spot. Finally, let's look at the blocking. He is, I believe, Pro Football Focus has rated him the best run blocking wide receiver in the country. And that's awesome. But it's a whole different kind of blocking when you're playing tight end. So when you're at tight end, you're blocking, you know, you're down blocking into defensive ends, you're grabbing linebackers. That's just a different ballgame than blocking from the wide receiver position where you're blocking cornerbacks or safeties, or if you have to take on a linebacker, you're getting a bit of a running start and you're acting more as just a, hey, slow them down so the runner can bounce outside or so the screen can get down the seam. Again, it's not impossible. I wonder if the fit is really there when we fully think through the idea of him putting on weight and becoming a tight end. Like, I agree with you on paper. It's great as purely a Florida State fan. Yeah, I would love to have another tight end because I think that that's a room. Back to our other question, I don't think I rank tight ends, but I'd probably put them pretty low on the strength of our units. And yeah, I'd love it. But from the perspective of, is the juice worth the squeeze for Johnny Wilson? And then is it worth it for the time it would take to put on good weight to get him up there? I'm just not sure. I think for me, I'm going to give a final answer that he stays at receiver while, again, not dismissing your premise, because I do think it's a valid question and I don't think it's a bad idea. I don't see it happening. So I've got 2 more questions to answer. I got 1 more from Timmy about sort of what our game plan will break down into. And then Dr. RJP talking about a few comments I've made about the offense. Before I do that though, folks, I got to tell you about Bet Online. Bet Online is where you should be putting your action. We got the NHL playoffs going on. We got the NBA playoffs going on. MLB is in full swing. And there's future bets out there on win totals now. So go to betonline.net for all of your gaming needs and use promo code LOCKEDON when you make your account. Betonline.net, where the game starts. All right, folks, last two questions. I appreciate you rocking and rolling with me on a solo Mailbag Monday today. It's been a lot of fun. I miss my co-host dearly, but, you know, every now and then it's fun to get out there yourself, you know, wearing your work clothes because it's the middle of the day, got a blazer on, all that good stuff. If y'all are rocking and rolling this long, hit that subscribe button. Seriously, it brightens our day, and it means the world to me. So the next question is a bit about what our game's going to look like. It comes from Timmy, and he says, I believe he's talking about LSU. Our team will carry us to win this game, and our running back room, especially that 1-2 punch with Ward and Benson, will be just like Clemson last year, where they had to rely on their defense so much because DJ sucked and their O-line was horrible and the receivers weren't great either. They also had to rely on their running back Shipley, so if FSU can rely on their defense in this game, we will win 35-21 FSU. It's a bold prediction, Timmy, but not a crazy one, right? If you look at our team from last year, we averaged 27.5 points for, and we had an average allowed of 26.5. If you look at the top teams we played, so let's say Notre Dame, Wake Forest, Louisville, who else was, and then Clemson and NC State and Miami, probably the best teams we played, we averaged and allowed 32 points in that game. So, yeah, we need to bring that number down. But again, we're returning 76% of all of our defensive tackles last year. Not the position, but the amount of tackles we had on defense last year, the guys that made it, 76.12% of that's coming back. Our defense should be much improved, and I completely agree with you. I think the blueprint here is very much like it was against Miami or even North Carolina. So in my mind, we saw a very similar game plan against Miami and against North Carolina where we punched them in the mouth early, we got up, and we held on. Now, this year against North Carolina, that resulted in a 10-point win. With Miami, it got a little closer. It got pretty nerve-wracking there for a second. But I do think you're right. I think if we're going to beat LSU, that is going to be the way they need to do it. It's use your run game, try to find some seams early, get good blocking schemes that create motion. And I'm going to talk about this in a second. But I got a lot of comments from LSU fans about how good their D-line is, and I don't want to diminish that. They do have a very talented defensive line. However, if you look at the things that Alex Atkins is able to do well, one of those is creating mismatches through offensive line motion. What I mean by that is when you've got, and again, they're going to have a new D coordinator, so we don't know exactly what it'll look like, but we've got our five offensive linemen. They've got their four front here, right? They can do one of two things. They can line up in man, or they can line up in gap control and try to two-gap against us. When Alex Atkins gets those looks, and he's got guys trying to two-gap, right, where the defensive guys, I know this is kind of a weird visual, but roll with me. The defensive linemen are trying to fill gaps. That's when he really shines. And I suspect that with the talent they have on the interior and the perceived weaknesses of our offensive line, you will see a lot of gap assignment from LSU because they'll be thinking, okay, if we can clog the gap, we can let our linebackers come downhill, and that'll let us stop the run game. And I think that's about exactly what Alex Atkins wants, because when you have, say, three offensive linemen, right, and you've got guys lined up in the gaps instead of head up, well, then this guy can let him shoot this gap, and you can trigger motion here and come around with the pull as he is then down blocking and creating space at the second level. And you could do, that's just one example. But I think that if we're able to get creative, we'll open running lanes. And then you take into account the fact that we don't just have good running backs. We have, in my opinion, one of the best running quarterbacks in the entire country. You watch Jordan Travis's development, and he's gone from a good runner to a great quarterback runner. He's good at reading holes. He's great, in my opinion, with the read option. I mean, literally his ability to hold the ball in there till the last second, look for a seam and pull it, is pretty prolific. There's other things he doesn't do well, but he does that really, really well, in my opinion. So I think if we can do that, the recipe is, yeah, try to score 31 points, right? 31, 35 points, maybe even 28, and then just hope that your defense can hang on. LSU's got great wide receivers, but we don't know who's going to be throwing them the ball. It's either going to be Jaden Daniels, transferred out of Arizona State, or it's going to be Miles Brennan, who we don't know much about because he was injured last year for most of it. So I agree with you, Timmy. I think that's the recipe to win this LSU game. Finally, Dr. RJP asks, I was talking about us running a lot of gadgety stuff, and he said, what gadget did FSU run last year? The Wildcat, that's not a gadget formation. I would encourage y'all to go back and watch some film from last year. The condensed games are on YouTube. And pay attention to what our offensive line is doing. So for me, when I said we run more of a high schoolish offense, right, or a young college offense, it's not that we're doing gadgets like in the Willie Taggart sense. And I said this when I made the comment to which he's referring, that Willie Taggart did a bunch of crazy, weird, gadgety stuff. But Norvell's offense is very much reliant on misdirection. It's reliant on a lot of trickery. So I'll call out a couple plays. I should have gone back and looked at what game, but one of the film analyses I did actually got pulled down because of copyright reasons, so we'll figure that out. But there was an example of this one play where we were lined up in a normal formation. Cam McDonald was lined up as what I call a squat back. So squat back is when a tight end is about two steps behind the tackle and one step to the left, and he's down in either a low two-point or three-point stance, similar to what you'd see in a triple option, or a wing T type situation. Excuse me. First play I saw them run, Jordan Travis snaps it, Cam McDonald pulls to the right, the guard and the tackle both pull to the right, Jordan Travis hands it off, it's a counter step, Jayshon Corbin takes off, it works pretty well. Three plays later in that same game, I really wish I could remember which one this was, but if you watch any game, you'll see these kinds of setups. Same thing. Squat back to the left, counter play to the right. This time, Jordan Travis keeps it and runs with it. So now, you've got a look where the D-line and the linebackers are starting to look and go, okay, we're not 100% sure who's going to be running it, but we've seen a counter, which is where the running back jab steps left and then cuts back right. We've seen the quarterback take it right. And we know we can't be blocked by this offensive line. So when we see them pull, the guard and the tackle from the left, pull around to the right, we know that's where the ball's going because they're not going to risk a naked run there because they don't have the blocking for it. Three or four plays later, ball snapped. Big counter step from Jayshon. You're expecting the counter. Guard and tackle both pull. The difference here is Cam McDonald does not move. He doesn't pull right this time, but that gets lost in the shuffle, and he takes like four steps forward, turns around, grabs a screen pass, and takes off for 18 yards. So it's things like that is what I'm talking about. It's this offense under Norvell last year had to rely on things like that, where it takes two or three or four plays doing a similar look to set up another play because you're relying on a lot of misdirection, a lot of scheming guys open versus having the offense where you're saying, okay, look, our receivers are just better than them. Our O-line's going to block it up better than them. And we're just going to take it straight to them and hit them in the mouth. So that's what I mean by I want this offense to look a little less gadgety, because while that stuff works, there are two issues with having to rely on that a lot. One, you have to set it up. So you have to do plays that may work, may not. But again, you're just trying to do those to get the defense used to a look. And it's not that efficient, right? You kind of have to waste plays to do that. Number two, it gets a little complicated for your for your offense. That's a lot of install that has to go into it, right? Because it's the same thing, right? You're saying, hey, we're going to do the same basic thing four times, but the end result, we're going to run it four different ways. And I would ask you to go back and watch the condensed game and watch the last play of the first quarter. Jordan Travis, so the run play that we scored on with Jayshon Corbin, we did, again, guard and tackle on the left side, both pulled around to the right, created the seam, Corbin ran for a touchdown. We get to the last play of the first quarter. Jordan Travis snaps the ball, same thing, left tackle, left guard, both pull. It's looking like it's going to be the same run play. He pulls up to throw a screen to the left side now. So the guard and tackle are gone. He pulls up to throw a screen, and none of the wide receivers over there remember they were supposed to be on a screen, and they were running decoy routes or blocking, and Jordan Travis just has to take an 8-yard sack because the communication with the receivers got messed up. And again, that happens when you have to rely on like running very similar looks, and guys don't always remember the play. So, and then the third thing is just once, like, you only can really do that so many times, right? Because once you set something up and then you run the play they're set up for, well, you know, they're going to start to adjust. Same reason that, Jayshon turns one run into a touchdown. Trayshon runs the same run or Toafili runs the same run. Doesn't work out for touchdowns for either of them. And I think they each got subsequently less yards because they started to figure out how to run fit into that pulling scheme. So this year, I would like to see more mano-a-mano, head up, let's run the fundamentals where we're able to block you and just open up some running holes, and then we can bust that stuff out as needed. But who knows if that's going to happen or not. I don't know. I'll be here watching. Folks, thank you so much for your questions. Thank you for taking the time to engage with us. I love going back and forth with y'all on YouTube and all that. So let's keep it going. Thank you for stopping by. I'm Max, and this was Locked On Seminoles.